Coming up on Back in My Play, Peter Brown from GameSpot.com joins me to discuss a game that is not really old, but is absolutely taking inspiration from games like The Legend of Zelda and Dragon Warrior from the 8-bit generation. We're talking about 3D Dot Game Heroes on the Sony PlayStation 3. Aside from that, we're also getting into a bunch of Sega news, including Sega Ages games coming to the Nintendo Switch, a Mega Drive Mini that might actually not be so great, and then, of course, the Larrabee Lock, Shenmue 1 and 2 HD coming to current generation consoles. I told you it was coming. It's finally here. We get into all that right now on Back in My Play. Back to Back in My Play. My name is Kevin Larrabee, and joining me for this episode, I got Peter Brown from GameSpot.com. Peter, how are you?
Kevin, hi, man. I'm good. Thanks for having me back on.
It's been a while.
It has been.
Remember those days where we used to just talk about Mercs and how awesome that game is for the Sega Genesis?
That must have been over a year ago now.
Way back when you know, we're still discovering like really cool retro games, but now... Like, this is the thing with Back in My Play. It's awesome. And it's insane that we could actually have a good reason for talking about a PlayStation 3 game on this show. But that's where we find ourselves today.
Yeah, I haven't touched my PS3 in a long time, but you and even John Linneman have sort of inspired me to pick it up and play a bit. And it's, you know what? PlayStation 4 has sort of made me forget maybe how primitive the PS3 is in some ways, but it's been fun to revisit it for sure.
Totally. Don't you love downloading games and then installing them for 45 to 60 minutes before you get to play them?
I was going through that last night, installing Metal Gear Solid, the PS1 classic.
Yeah.
I think it took 20 minutes to install that game.
I know. And I literally did the same exact thing last night. And it's like a 780 megabyte download that then needs to expand. And like, it's like, I feel like it's like burning two discs inside the system or something on a 1X CD burner to make it happen, but it's not. I don't know. I don't get it.
I would love to know why.
And even like, I have like one of those, well, tangent time, but like, that's like, I got really into PlayStation 3 stuff over the last couple months just because it is a system. And that's why we're talking about 3D Dot Game Heroes today, but it is a system with a lot of unique hidden gems, many of which, it's so weird, many of which that aren't even available for download, like Yakuza 3 for some reason never was available for download. So you have to get on a disc. Same thing with 3D Dot Game Heroes. So I've been just cultivating this very tight, this lean, mean PS3 collection just for the future of this show. So we can talk about some of those games down the road.
That was me about 2 years ago.
Smart.
Glad to hear you're catching up.
I am. So now I have three PlayStation 3s in different places in my house for no good reason. But it's okay because I'm sure they will last for a very, very long time. But before we get into the discussion for this game, I want to preface, I guess, a couple things real quick. First, we're just going to have a general discussion about this game just because I think it makes a lot of sense for the where both Peter and I are coming from with this game. Also, we're going to have a pretty extensive news section because there was a lot of big announcements from Sega this previous week. So we're going to be talking about a lot of that news. And then also, when we're talking about Metal Gear Solid, the next couple weeks / months are going to be pretty insane. I'm going to do my best with scheduling to make sure that the show stays regular. But Peter, as you know firsthand, there's a game that's coming out in a couple days that's probably going to take up a lot of my time called God of War. So I kind of have to play that, but I would like for, the next couple weeks to cover first Metal Gear Solid, Metal Gear Solid 2, Star Fox 2. And that is leading into, of course, not Star Fox 2 being part of it, but, the huge, I think we're going to record it in May, Metal Gear Solid 4 episode with Ryan Payton, looking back on just the incredible development of that game and the anticipation and the pressure that was on all of them over there to, you know, basically create a system seller for the PlayStation 3 in the position that it was in back then. But we're going to be doing all of that. And I'm sure there's going to be a couple more things that pop in here or there if they pique my interest. But yeah, a lot of great episodes that are going to be coming down the road. Peter, did you ever finish Star Fox 2?
No, definitely not.
All 22 minutes of it?
I know, right? I played a bit of it, but I certainly got to a point where it was just cumbersome enough that I felt like, you know, I get it. I understand.
Yeah, I played it. It was called, you know, Star Fox Adventures or Star Fox 64. Sure. A lot of those elements made it into those games, or Star Fox Assault as well, I believe. All great games in the Star Fox library. But with all that being said, what we should really do is take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk very, very briefly about the history of 3D Dot Game Heroes. Just talk about it briefly. Then we'll get into our discussion. But I still like to have some segments specifically because the soundtrack for this game is one of the huge highlights for it. So here's some more music from 3D Dot Game Heroes. Let's talk briefly about the history of 3D Dot Game Heroes. Not really an old game just yet. Usually, I think Jeremy Parrish for Retronauts has used this guideline. If it's 10 years old, it's retro. We're allowed to kind of talk about it in like the retro community. And I agree to that to a huge extent. But since 3D Dot Game Heroes is very much riffing off of games like, of course, Legend of Zelda, Dragon Quest, these 8-bit games that we grew up with, I thought maybe we can make an exception for 3D Dot Game Heroes. And it's just such a rad game to chat about. And I think if you've played it or if you're going to play it, you will see why. But briefly, the game came out November 2009 in Japan. And then just a couple months later, May 11th, 2010, in the United States and in the U.S., it was published by Atlas USA and, of course, developed by From Software. This was the first game that I ever played from From Software, which, you know, Peter, as you know, they really became popular with games like Demon's Souls and Dark Souls.
Yeah, and if, you know, you look back not knowing about this game, you might think, huh, that's pretty curious. And certainly, they also worked with Silicon Studio, I believe, to a degree. I don't know if they just made the engine or not, because they're known for their middleware.
That's literally the only interview I was trying to get, like, interviews with developers of the game, because it was really kind of difficult to find pre-release material sure. about it, just to get some more, like, I wanted anecdotes of like, yeah, we obviously made this game because we are huge fans of the original Legend of Zelda and we wanted to recapture that on, you know, with this insane graphics engine that we have available to us. But that was the only interview that I could find, was from someone at Silicon Graphics talking about it.
Interesting. Yeah, they've been done, you know, Bravely Default, I think, is maybe what they stand out for the most these days. But they definitely worked on like rendering engines. And for as simple as 3D Dot Game Heroes is at heart, it actually has some very obvious like rendering options ticked off mm-hmm. in its box. Certainly like the depth of field and, you know, the lighting stuff. So you can see their influence in here, too, I think.
Absolutely. And I obviously, you know, we should mention for folks out there, and I should get my money's worth out of all these Japanese lessons. This is a very tough Japanese name. The translation was really difficult when they were localizing this, obviously, but it was 3D Dotto Gemu Hirozu. So
nice. Yeah. You did it.
Look at that. I can actually, this is one of the benefits of getting these Japanese lessons, is I should not butcher these names as much on the podcast. So
progress.
money well spent. All right. And then when we kind of talk about the developers of this, of course, you know, a lot of the team from From Software was working on it, but also with many games like, you know, currently with many games today, like the list of composers on a game is like a laundry list. It's very often not just one person working on a game in terms of composing the music, but a huge team. But I do want to mention Shinji Hose worked on the soundtrack for this game, which is available on CD. You can get it from Amazon Japan. It is really, really fantastic. I absolutely love it. And there's no way that I'm going to be able to put all my favorite tracks for this game in this episode. So I would recommend, if you haven't already, go to YouTube, listen to the soundtrack, and then please, if you can, support the, I guess you're supporting From Software, hopefully the composers a little bit, or at least the publishing house that released the CD, because it is just, it's so kick-ass. I really, really love the soundtrack for this game. And it, like Peter, I think this is something that we talk about repeatedly over the, you know, the last however many years we've been talking about retro games, where like that's one of the most important factors for games that can be somewhat repetitive, like 3D Dot Game Heroes.
You know what, man? I honestly think the variety of the soundtrack in this game is one of its strong suits. Like, totally. The songs sound really well, but I honestly never really grew tired of listening to it.
I know.
But yes, it is repetitive. I will give you that.
Well, I should have clarified. I mean, like, in terms of like the combat, especially if you're like searching for something, you're trying to find, like, you know, this is something we'll talk about more in the next segment, but there'll be some times where you're just trying to get somewhere and it's just such a pain in the ass to get somewhere, but at least you have this awesome music in the background to listen to while you're trying to get there.
Yes, absolutely.
And you know, again, I think this is probably the best time to talk about it, but you know, when you look at this game, and maybe we'll kind of even take a step back and put what we would normally talk about, you know, back in the day in this section. But I remember when this game was getting talked about and it was getting hyped up, and I guess hyped up is maybe not the right word for it, but it was kind of under the radar. And I only found out about the game because of a Giant Bomb quick look, like literally back in 2009, you know, talking about this game. And obviously the standout is the art style. It was just, you know, that voxel art style and that engine that just made this game look like nothing we had kind of really ever seen before.
Yeah, it works most of the time. There are sometimes though when the camera zooms in and it's a bit much.
Oh, we'll talk about that. We'll talk about that. And I think this is just the perfect setup from the back of the box. Return to the golden age of gaming and embark on a nostalgia-laden pixel heroes quest across vast 3D landscapes and mysterious dungeons to save Dotnia from a legendary evil. Gives you the ability to create your own characters and to upgrade your obscenely large sword. So that's probably all we really need to talk about the history. And then we can just take another break. We can listen to some more music. We'll highlight the awesome soundtrack. And we're just going to hang out. We're going to talk about this game. And hopefully, if you haven't already, talk you into picking up a copy and playing it on your own. So stick around. We'll be right back. Buckle up, folks. We're going to be hanging out and talking about 3D Dot Game Heroes for the PlayStation 3. And again, I wanted to talk about this game as I was cultivating this PlayStation 3 library, because I remember picking it up back in the day, like really, really for really cheap. Like maybe it was $20 on sale on Amazon or something like that. It was obviously not a very big seller, specifically in Japan. Like the game sold like 20,000 copies. Like it bombed in Japan. But the insane thing is it sold like 400,000 copies in the US. It was like a reasonable success, or maybe that was the US and Europe. It actually sold a lot more than it did in Japan. So Actually, here, I have the perfect, I have the statistics right here for you. According to Famitsu Magazine, 3D Dot Game Heroes sold 17,300 units in Japan in its first year, making it the 463rd best-selling game of the year in that region. In Atlas USA, good that I checked these stats. Atlas USA reported in October 2010 that 3D Dot Game Heroes sold 160,000 units, greater than six times the amount they had anticipated. And I remember this because a game like sold out super quick, because this was, I think this was a game that when it came out, obviously they didn't print a ton of copies and it was impossible to find a copy. Like, it was sold out everywhere. And then eventually Atlas USA did a reprint, got some more copies out there. And again, if you're looking at it, it literally sold eight times as many copies, more than eight times as many copies in the US than Japan, which you would, I mean, I guess you can't help but be surprised by those numbers, considering it seems like a game perfectly made for like Japanese gamers.
Yeah, I would have at least expected those numbers to just be closer. That's a huge delta between the two of them.
Yeah, and of course, you know, there are many more people in the US than in Japan, but like it is still just insane. Famitsu, again, the check probably didn't clear. Famitsu gave it a 30 out of 40, but that's still a pretty good score. You know, it has a Metacritic of 77 out of 100 here in the US, but, or I guess, you know, outside of Famitsu. But I thought that this game was going to be like a really big hit because it was a word of mouth game. It was one of those games I kind of just picked up as, you know, people heard about it through word of mouth. Was this like on your radar, Peter, back then with 3D Dot Game Heroes?
No, but so by the time it came out, I wasn't in the video game industry at the moment. I was living in Texas, just doing a bunch of other things, and video games kind of weren't the focal point of my my spare time. But once I got to GameSpot, I think it was Tom McShay was talking about it because he was going back to replay the original Zelda. And this game just kind of came up in conversation. And yeah, when I first looked at it, it was certainly surprising. And, you know, one I've been curious to play, but it took me years to get there. It took me you asking me about it to get there.
And that's, I think that's, I mean, that's selfishly one of the reasons why I do this show, is because it can be a little bit of a push for not only other folks, but for myself to play games that we had sitting on the shelf for far, far too long. But now, back when it did come out, again, like I mentioned, it was an unfortunate thing where it was, again, 2010. There was just lots and lots of fantastic games. Like, that was the prime time for that generation, for the PlayStation 3, for the Xbox 360. So when it came to time, you know, to play games, this wasn't necessarily at the top of my list. I'm sure I was playing like Gears of War 2 or something like that. And, you know, Halo 3, like a lot of my gaming time was going to stuff like that. But again, thankfully we get to talk about it on this show. So I never got very deep, but again, it was really striking. It was so cool to be able to play like what you would consider to be a, you know, if you could take the NES original Legend of Zelda and blow up those pixels, make them 3D, like that's kind of what that would look like, right? Yeah, like, I'm guessing that was their idea. And you mentioned the camera angle. So I will preface this. The best thing everyone can do, and when you start the game, change the camera angle immediately, because what they do is they angle it so far down, or I guess like almost closer to parallel to the ground. So you're almost getting like a behind the back, like third person view, where you have the option in the options to make it so it is much more like a, I guess the best comparison I could make is to A Legend of Zelda Link Between Worlds, where it's not necessarily top down, but it's a little bit of an angle. So you can actually see the whole area and you're not getting surprised by enemies coming out of nowhere to hit you and stuff. It zooms it out a little bit so you don't have to have such a hard time with the camera, because it can be kind of a pain in the ass when you're playing this game.
A little bit.
So set up for this game, guess what? Things have gone bad in the kingdom. A king calls upon you, the hero, to go and save the world again. So you will go get the ancient sword. You will use that, and then you will go to a dungeon where you then need to beat a boss. You will get a heart container at the end, and then you go to the next temple. It is the Zelda formula. So I need to ask you, Peter, again, I think we'll talk about how far we got in this game, but I think I'm very high on this game. I think one of the weakest parts of this game are the dungeons.
Yeah, the first few are very quick.
Yes.
I should say. The bosses tend to be very easy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I'd have to agree with you. I think I found myself, every time I was in a dungeon, I thought, I think I'd rather be playing the original Legend of Zelda right now.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not any more complicated necessarily, but I think there's only so many games of that type you can really play and enjoy, and I think I found my one back on the NES. So this one was good, yeah, but it doesn't really hold a candle. I think I used that phrase earlier. It doesn't really hold a candle to the original, you know, the inspiration, I don't think.
And you don't even have a candle. You have to like actually pick up individual candles to use them one at a time instead of just like having a lantern or something like that. So again, I think it is mostly working off of the original Legend of Zelda where you didn't necessarily have a lantern, but you remember you could actually just like use a candle and then like use it once in the room. Like if you had the orange candle versus the blue candle, you could just, you know, use the orange candle once so you could illuminate the room. Where in this, you actually have consumable candles. So eventually you could use that candle over the course of a couple rooms, but then it would go out. But like you mentioned, just talking about how much the music helps this game. And I think like the overworld is, it makes the game. And we should obviously talk about the temples, but with the overworld, you just have these like really fun areas to look at that are just filled with insanely wacky characters and just really like stupid in a positive way, side missions that just seem like, again, they just are winking and nodding to everyone that played Dragon Quest, that everyone that played, you know, Legend of Zelda back then. And of course the localization team seemed to have a lot of fun doing the translations for them too.
Yeah, it kind of reminded me a bit of, you know, Undertale, maybe even a hint of Earthbound in there with the acknowledgement of, you know, design and overworld tropes, and then just sort of like making fun of them at the same time. Definitely enjoyable to see that. Like, great writing in this game all around, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. So when you go to the, I'm going to hit on some story beats. So if you're thinking about playing this, you might, I don't think anything is going to absolutely be spoiled, but... and I won't even bring up like the specific things that they say, but it is just interesting that you can go into that first town after finishing the first temple and you can get your dash boots like immediately, which of course you need to have dash boots in the game, which are more or less useless because of how long your sword is.
Yeah.
You're going to slam into walls constantly. Like there's really no, unless you're like, there's actually like mini games where you need to dash and stuff like that. And they're just such a pain in the ass because like every time you just slam your sword into a wall, which again is one of the things that stands out about this game. When you have full health, you don't actually have like a laser beam or like a beam of light that comes off your sword. Your sword is just obscenely big. Like it is not just very long. Like it will take up like a third the thickness of the width of the screen when you use it too, which again, I think is a good thing, right? I mean, that's kind of cool.
It's kind of cool at first. It definitely does become problematic at times. but yeah, it's just so unusual, which I think for everything in this game that's unusual, it works in its favor because there's just kind of nothing like it. You know, you expect it to be this very straight homage, but it really isn't scared to do something silly to kind of set itself apart.
No, and there are... you know, I want to go back to the temples again, just kind of hanging out, chatting about this stuff. But also another bummer about the temples is that the frame rate is usually pretty bad in the temples, yeah, which is super weird because like you think it would be less complex than what's going on outside.
Right. I know you've got smaller environments, you know, but I think it's that lighting.
Exactly. Like the reflections.
The real-time lighting and shadows and reflections that really do the damage.
But you get to, again, throughout the dungeons, you're going to see a lot of the same mechanics that you saw in the original Legend of Zelda. You're going to see stairs going up and down. You're going to be pushing blocks all over the place. You're going to be figuring out, you know, what buttons should I be pushing down that are on the ground with the blocks that I have available to me to make the chest open up. But you mentioned the first couple dungeons. not really a problem. I think it is probably, let me look at my notes here. It is probably when you get to the desert temple, or at least when you're on your way to the desert temple and you're going through Ortega Village, where it just
this
becomes
was an hour of my life last night.
Okay. So it's two components. One, and this happens pretty much for all the later temples too, where it becomes like a lot of work just to get to the temple. Like you have to figure out mazes and stuff like that, or what path to go through, or it's just a long way where you're just like zigzagging up and down a mountain before getting to a temple that then seems to also be like needlessly complex, like not really inventive in terms of the mechanics and the puzzles that you're solving, but just kind of like a pain in the ass to get through.
Yeah. Can we talk about the desert? Can we
please
do that?
Yeah. I'm okay. Looking at my notes from it right now.
Yeah. So you mentioned the soundtrack kind of carrying you through. Like, I love the theme going up there, or rather down to the desert temple. And that was super important because I was incredibly frustrated. The map gives you these series of moving pathways, and you have to try to decipher through these, you know, these labyrinthian like layouts. Like, okay, well, which one do I step on to get to where I need to go? Mm-hmm. And once you're on, you can't interrupt anything. You have to let it run its course.
Yep. You're along for the ride.
Yeah. Now the solution, once it becomes apparent, is sort of like, oh, okay, well, obviously that's how I should have looked at the map and gotten from point A to point B. But at first you're trying to decipher just using, you know, what you see. And the way that it tells you which way that these moving sidewalks are going is not that clear at first. I wasted so much time last night trying to just go through one after another. And it does that thing where, you know, it'll send you on a path and you think, oh, cool, I'm going in the right direction. And then it'll be like, no, I'm going to
redirect
you actually and send you back home.
Yep.
Okay. And the point of it all, I'm not really sure. It's a puzzle, I guess.
It's using like the same like conveyor belt type thing that you would see in Link to the Past.
Sure. But yeah, it's that wasn't the best time last night. But then you realize like, oh right, I just walk between the cacti that are in
Origins,
and that'll take me to where I need to go. And it's like, okay, at that point, fair enough.
And also I should have mentioned this before, but the towns are just full of awesome characters. Towns are full of awesome characters with just like ridiculous things going on. And also like with like, I don't want to say interesting mini games, but like there are some interesting mini games. Like there's a blockout type game that you can play at a bunch of shops. Like for what reason, I don't really know, because it takes so long for that thing to progress that it is just like, you almost make yourself lose so you can just get back to the game. And again, we're saying a lot of negative things right now, but what is important is the whole scope of the game, because there are just a lot of like really great parts. Like going through the towns is fantastic. You know, trying to do these side missions is a lot of fun. You'll run into characters that are very reminiscent of characters that you saw in, again, I think, I mean, they talk about Legend of Zelda a lot, but there's like a lot of Dragon Quest or Dragon Warrior in this game too. But the boss battles are at least rad. Like the boss battles are pretty fun. And later on, Peter, there are just some like hard ass, like super difficult boss battles. Like the spike in difficulty is insane once you get to, I think it was it might actually be the desert temple. It's either in the desert temple or in the water temple, where like, and then the flame temple. Oh my God, the flame temple.
I heard you complaining about that one the other day.
Yeah. So, I'm sorry for jumping all over the place, but now that I'm looking at this, we need to talk about the goddamn flame temple. Worst temple, or the worst dungeon I've ever played in the game, just because, again, needless difficulty, where you actually had to go like through full round trips. Like you had to go through the specific route multiple times to unlock, like in a Zelda game, you would have that red and blue switch that would be in the room, usually for the most part, or at least in the next couple rooms over, that would open up different paths throughout an area, right?
Yeah.
Those red and blue switches that move the red and blue blocks up and down. It switches between the two.
Yeah.
In this, you would basically have to hit a switch, go all the way through one path through the dungeon to bring you all the way back to the front. And then you'd have to go all the way back through the alternative path, now that you hit the switch that was all the way at the end, So you'd have to basically do like 2 round trips throughout the whole dungeon to get to an area. And also, this is where there's a huge spike in difficulty where like you get hit 3 times in the dungeon, even with 9 like heart containers, you're done. You're dead. And then you go right back to the start and you have to do it all over again. And that's where I almost quit. I almost quit in that section because there's like very much like Zelda, they have the same exact enemies. Like you have what do they call the poles in the original Zelda? It wasn't like a pole's voice. That was those, the rabbit dudes, but like the ghoul, the ghost that would fire the magic like beams at you. You get to have specific power-ups for that. And then the dark nuts in this game are so hard. They're so difficult. And again, just like really brutal and kind of clunky with how everything controls. It sounds like I'm talking about a lot of bad. I still love this game.
I know. I'm with you, and I'm asking myself, like, why am I also conflicted about this? Because it is such an enjoyable experience, but it is sort of riddled with these tiny little annoyances. But then you sort of have to ask yourself, okay, how much of that is because it's tied to the past?
Exactly. You know? Exactly. That's exactly what I was just going to say. It's like, dude, this is basically like this is a game made for the NES.
Yeah,
and it just happens to have better graphics.
Yeah, so as someone who reviews games for a living, right? There's always this weird line you straddle between judging a game based on what the developers, you know, what you assume the developers were trying to do, right? Like, does it accomplish what it set out to do? But then you also have to, you know, cross-reference that with, am I enjoying myself? Is this actually something I want to play?
Right.
This game does satisfy both of those things in a positive way, I think. But yeah, like the antiquated stuff it's antiquated.
Well, I think that's why so many people, or I should say the folks that do like this game, really love this game for those reasons, because it is very much a nostalgic trip for the good and bad, right?
Yeah.
And it is, again, it's where those difficulty spikes are. Like you said, like those first couple dungeons are easy, then it gets super hard, and then it gets easy again. Like the fire temple is such a huge pain in the ass. Then the next temple, like the wind temple, no problem. Like it just is super long. Like it just takes forever because it is needlessly complex, and it has like 5 levels, and there's just a lot of stuff in there, but not a lot of reasons to see everything that's in there. It's just like, that's the path you have to go through to get the item and then to get the key and then to get to the boss.
Yeah. The desert temple was a bit long winded for sure.
Yeah.
And I just knew the moment I walked in there, I was like, okay, I need the hook shot or whatever the equivalent is called. And it took the majority of the dungeon to finally get that. And then it was easy to get through it. But then, yes, the boss, I think that's where I saw the difficulty spike quite a bit. You know, it's that huge stone mech looking guy who stomps around and has the lasers and stuff. Doable, totally doable.
Yeah.
But yeah, certainly like caught me by surprise.
And like you have those like... Again, now that we're talking about it, it feels so much like an 8-bit game because there's so many of those like controller throw moments, like F you game, like screw you. Like if this is how you're going to treat me as a gamer, this is unacceptable. It is 2010. I'm not dealing with this shit anymore. But what it gets you is the charm. Like you mentioned the desert and, Ortego Village is the village that you go to right before that. Usually there's always a village or an inn that you go to before the temple. That way you can save, you can maybe do a side mission. Maybe that is usually where the sage or the sage equivalent will be. So they can just give you some tips or just say like, here I am, come back to me when you're done with the temple and I'm going to give you a magic spell or something like that. But again, these callbacks, I wanted to ask you, if you accepted the poof poof from the lady in Ortego Village.
The poof poof?
Yeah, this is again a callback to, well, actually, I think it's 2 games, both Dragon Quest and The Legend of Zelda, where I will have to look up this exact reference to make sure that our wonderful listeners do not go at me on Twitter or think that I am less of a person for not remembering this. I want to say this is Dragon Warrior or Dragon Quest that this is from, but basically you go into a house and all there is there's a woman in there. Here we go. Found it. Boom. Dragon Quest. But basically what happens is you go into a room and there's just a woman there like with 2 beds and she's like, would you like poof poof? And basically, I guess the idea is that she is giving you some lovin'. But what happens is, and this happened in Dragon Quest as well, I'm gonna have to look up where this exactly came from. I want to say it's also like The Legend of Zelda 2, because you remember there's like, you know, you go into the town and there's a woman outside who will basically say like, come inside and I will make you feel better. And you go inside and she closes the door and you come out and you miraculously have full health.
Right.
But what happens in 3D Dot Game Heroes is that she shuts the lights off, and then her dad, or the man who there, a man shows up when the lights turn back on, and she says, like, did he do a good job? So like, you go there expecting like, oh man, I'm going to get it on with this 8-bit lady. And then what happens is she turns the lights on and it was a guy. So.
Jeez, sexual assault. Yeah. I don't even know what you'd call that. Sexual bait and switch.
Yeah. I think it was her dad, because like he says like, oh, and you met my daughter. I'm like, oh man. Well, I swear, maybe this is from Zelda. I feel super bad for not knowing exactly where this is coming from, but I'm sure people who are listening know what I'm talking about. Yeah, there's other parts where like you'll go to an inn and like the innkeeper will say, all right, you want to stay? And normally it's like 100 like gold a night, depending on the town, or like 20 gold. And they're like, it's 20,000 gold to stay tonight. And you're like, no. He's like, all right, well, how about 10,000 gold? And you're like, no. And he's like, all right. And then he finally, like, you work him down to a reasonable price. Just lots of weird stuff like that that call back to other games. But there are lots of comparisons to the Zelda map too. Like, you literally go into a lost woods, right? There's a cemetery, which, spoiler alert, also holds the equivalent of the Master Sword in it, which is, again, oddly enough, underneath a grave. So I don't know. There's so much to like about this game. There are so many things that they could have done better. And I think it's also an acknowledgement, and it shows how hard it is to create temples and dungeons in games like The Legend of Zelda that work so well, that have such a good path and cohesion, and just like they work how they should, and they're not just like super confusing. Like, you just happen to, you know, go on the right path and you're not even thinking about it as you go through these stages or these dungeons. Where in 3D Dot Game Heroes, like, I don't know if they necessarily had that strength that all those, you know, Zelda games do so well.
Yeah, the individual rooms of a dungeon weren't necessarily, in 3D Dot Game Heroes, captivating or offering any interesting challenges. It was sort of like you enter a room and you're like, okay, I know exactly what I have to do.
Mm-hmm.
There were a couple instances of the Desert Temple where I think just one actually, where you had to move statues onto very long arrays of buttons on the floor.
Yes.
With no indication.
Okay.
Of how you of where you should place them or what the game is requiring of you.
Well, see, you had to go to there was a room before that where you had to use one of your, you know, magic spells to reveal. Oh, so okay. I think it was called Parallax.
That's one of the rooms. That's the one that has the couple, you know, there's like four corners and there's like two buttons in each corner. But before that, there's one that has two long rows of about 12 buttons apiece.
Right.
And you have to figure out where to put them. I didn't see the spell before that one. Maybe I missed it.
Great companion for this, Game Facts. That's what I used because, again, the fire dungeon is a huge pain in the ass and it really shouldn't be. It was so much so where I left off on this game. You guys probably, if you follow like the back of my play on Twitter, like I wanted to do this like a month ago. Then I literally stopped at that and I'm like, screw this. Like, I can't play this game anymore. I'm going to play fun games. Like, I'm going to play something else instead. So I came back to it and finished the Fire Temple this past week before going to the Wind Temple. And that's kind of where, again, Wind Temple, it was like, it's six floors, huge maps. It's just there's too much to do with very little reason to do it as you get towards the end, which is a bummer. I just felt like, not that it was padding, but like it was needlessly complex and it wasn't like a satisfying complexity where you feel like you figure things out. It is more, I'm just going to brute force this thing until I get to where I need to go.
Yeah. Your nostalgia can only carry you for so long, I feel.
Yeah. And I don't know, I'm trying to think off the top of my head of how many other games and franchises have really riffed off of The Legend of Zelda, or, I mean, Dragon Quest is a completely different genre, but of games like that and did it really successfully. Like the only one that kind of comes to mind at this moment is something like Okami, which takes that kind of structure and does something somewhat different with it.
Yeah.
You got nothing?
Yeah. No, I'm drawing a blank, man.
aside from
if you're talking about the original Zelda, like riffing off that, yeah, hard to come by.
You know what was really good was another like Zelda-like, but it was on the original NES, from SNK. What the hell is it called?
Oh God,
why am I blanking on this right now? I want to say it's not like Darwinia, but it was
not Athena.
No. I'm gonna find it in like 2 seconds. It was Crystalis.
Crystalis. Yeah, sure. Reminded of Arkista's Ring. Now that I think about it.
Oh yeah.
Did you play that on NES? Published
I did not.
By Sammy.
No.
It was a decent game.
Sammy before they joined Sega.
Yeah.
All these fantastic. Oh man, that's what happens. You go look at Google Images and be like, dude, I totally want to play that game. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe Crystalis will come down the road, but that'd be a really fun game to play through. I remember really enjoying that game. Of course, there were also similar games like Star Tropics with kind of similar overworlds and things like that, and even Goonies too. I don't know. Maybe not. All right, so I feel like I can still recommend this game also because it's still like only $12 at GameStop. Like if you want to go get a used copy of it because you can't get it digitally, it is absolutely worth picking up. Even if you only make it halfway through, it's a fun little nostalgia trip. And you can even do what I did, which is downloaded someone at IGN who did a customizable character that basically was Link, and you can actually just download, because the PS3 was really cool about this stuff. You could just download the save file, put it on a USB stick, use that USB stick with your PlayStation 3, transfer the save file to your PS3, and then you can load that custom character so you can play as Link, or you could play as, like, there was all these funny characters that folks made that you can download offline.
Yeah. I'm glad you brought that up, because that is another standout feature from this game, is that you can make your own characters in the game, and it's pretty flexible. And they have all these, you know, different states for when they're just walking or when they're attacking. Like, I think I have one, I don't know if I downloaded a package of characters myself, but there's one that's like a ninja who is just underground when he moves. Mm-hmm. So all you see is a little like breathing tube. But then he pops up when he wants to attack, but then he goes back underground and he's done. just very strange things. Like there's the mech robot from, what's that From Software Xbox game?
Oh God.
Metal Wolf Chaos.
Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah. Mr. President is his name.
Yes.
I mean, there's a lot of great references, even to Tenchu. I think there was a Tenchu character in there, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, they did. They did some DLC, with Little Big Planet as well. I think that is like the only update that was made to that game is for those extra characters being in there. And I'm just double checking this right now. But yeah, there are actual databases online where you can still go to and just download random characters like Shy Guys. And oh man, this is awesome. I wish I saw this before, because I remember playing it as Link back in the day, because I actually like downloaded that save file way back then. So I didn't have to worry about doing it, but like Batman, if you want to play as Batman, you can do that. You can play it as Super Mario. You can play it as Earthworm Jim, you know, all your favorite characters from video games. But
it's really nice too that they let you just, every time you boot up the game, they ask you, do you want to play as a different character?
Right.
Just sort of acknowledging the fact that, like, you know, a little bit of variety might help here.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't matter. You can play as whoever you want. You are the unnamed hero. But a last thing I want to mention, there are some audio issues with this game. So I had some severe audio issues playing it where the audio would skip going from screen to screen. But you just need to disable like almost all of your, for some reason it was like outputting in like 5.1 stereo, even though I have like a 2.0 system. So you might need to go into your settings for the PlayStation 3, just disable. There's like, again, PlayStation 3 was kind of cool about this stuff, but it was kind of weird where it would have like 20 different codecs that it would output in. Just make sure you deselect almost all of them if you are having that audio issue, because the last thing that you want is that music skipping from screen to screen. It was bugging me to like a ton, but then I think someone on the Discord for Back of My Play saves my ass on that one. So thank you. All right. Well, let's take a quick break. Then we're going to be right back with a huge pile of news that we got to cover, including, I told you guys, I told you Shenmue 1 and 2 HD was coming. I told you last year, and now it is finally here. So stick around. We'll be right back to talk about all that. So let's hit on all of this Sega news. Sega had an event in Japan a couple days ago, and they had some pretty big pieces of news that came out of it. We're going to hit on them one by one, starting with, and this, again, real highs and real lows after this announcement, the Mega Drive Mini, which, Peter, you and I, we've been looking at these consoles for a long time, these re-release consoles. We saw, I even forget what that piece of garbage was that had like a bunch of NES Sega games on it from 2 years ago now. That was, had a lot of hype. It had Mercs on it, man.
Was it like the Retrocade? I think, I don't know.
I forget. Yeah,
there's a lot of crappy hardware with some great old games on the box that they can't really play very well.
Yeah, I think it was literally at that time, it was the most popular video ever on the Back of My Play YouTube channel, because everyone couldn't believe how poorly games like Mercs would run on that thing. But I can't find it, so no big deal. But now they have the Mega Drive Mini, which again, folks saw it and we thought, hey, they're taking some notes from Nintendo and they're going to do it right this time. But what we saw is it's At Games, the same company that has made the previous.
Wait, so, are you serious?
Dead effing serious. The same company, they announced it. At Games mentioned it on Twitter. They said are making it. So, I know. This, right? Okay, so here's the deal. It's like you would think, oh my God, finally we're going to have like a SNES and NES classic equivalent that we will be able to have for Sega games, one that won't have garbage music, one that won't have incredible input lag, one that won't run these games worse than like, I don't know, like a 486. Like, I don't know how these games run so poorly on this hardware. And I don't understand why Sega, a company that has been making pretty good decisions as of late, would continue to go back to this company that has just made, I feel bad because no one ever tries to make bad products, but it's garbage. It does not live up to what those games that are going to be on this hardware deserve.
I'm kind of shell-shocked. You've ruined my Sunday, Kevin.
I'm sorry. So here, I'm going to just read you the official tweet from it. So, this is an article that went up on Sunday. It is a repackaged At Game Sega Genesis flashback.
Just repackaged? I mean, I'm looking at this Polygon thing that's...
Oh, do they have some stuff on
it? Polygon thing that says... Yeah, like Flash At Game says different emulation, additional features, etc., whatever that means.
Mm-hmm. So
they're suggesting that it's using a different type of emulation. So I would assume... That would be better than the flashback. But I don't trust Hat Games at all, though.
That's the problem. Is I'm actually going to pull up their Twitter account right now. So it's at G Flashback. It should be at ATG Flashback on Twitter. And again, you know, they're very excited about this stuff. They were tweeting a little bit about it, but you know, again, this is what they said. Retro fans in Japan will want to pay attention to this upcoming announcement. So yeah, as a surprise. Okay, sorry. Let me look at their replies. So we're doing this live. So okay, this is what they said. Oh God, such a bummer, dude. They even replied to some of these folks saying, "I understand the skepticism, but I'm sure you'll be open to changing your mind once the reviews come out for this and the versions for other territories." Let's see if I can go back to the original. Man, Twitter's such a pain in the ass to use.
Let's keep an open mind here. So,
they deleted that tweet. That was weird.
Interesting.
Yeah, they deleted their confirmation tweet, but then they also have been replying to other people tweeting about like their disappointment that they're doing it, and also asking about other features. And you know, this is something that both Peter, you and I should do. Is they have an email info@atgames.net for getting review units. But I mean, I've been burned too many times on these things where if I can't get a review unit, I'm just going to have to wait for you to look at this thing.
I don't even know if they're going to send me one. Did you read my last review? What? For their flashback? The headline literally says, "Do not buy." I never speak in such blanket terms, but like that thing was such a disappointment, such a clear... just a clear play or money, you know, cash.
Remember those controllers? This is what separates the NES and SNES Classic from stuff like that, is that it's not even just like how the games run, but if the controllers are garbage too, which they included garbage wireless, or like there were like micro or mini USB, or I think it was micro USB controllers with that thing that were just terrible. They were cheap. Just shit. Sorry. Like, I apologize for swearing, but they're terrible.
And the UI itself showed how little they cared about getting feedback from people with experience or, you know, educated taste in these sort of things. Right. It was an atrocity. It was, you use the D-pad to scroll through one menu, but you use like A and B to scroll through the actual submenu with game. Like, it was just... It was made by someone who's never designed UI before, by the looks of it.
And it's just like, how did this stuff get out the door? And my mind's refreshed. That thing was called the Retro Bit Generations. That I was talking about that had like games from all these awesome third parties, and it sounded like such a great lineup of games for $80. And then they all ran really, really poorly. But again, just to reread what they said. To someone that was skeptical, they said, "I understand your skepticism, but I'm sure you'll be open to changing your mind once the reviews come out for this and the versions for other territories." So maybe they understand to be positive, to be optimistic, that they made mistakes in the past. They saw reviews like yours. And if this is, you know, you said they might not want to send one to you because of your review, but I think that is you're the person that they should absolutely send one to, because if they really do have better emulation, if they have better, and the hardware doesn't need to be great, like a Raspberry Pi works fantastic for running Sega Genesis games, works great. This needs to do a better job than that.
That's what I was going to suggest, is that, you know, there are emulators out there that work quite well. And we've seen over the past couple of years, some sort of disagreements and, you know, fights between emulator authors and third-party hardware sellers, such as Hyperkin, about the use of, you know, open source license emulators and stuff. And a lot of that came down to an individual who was sort of making deals, you know, that he didn't really own the software, and thus there wasn't really a lot of support, and, you know, a lot of just bad business that resulted in bad products. There is a chance that throughout all of that, you know, there came a light at the end of the tunnel, which is these companies realizing, okay, if we just actually partner with emulator authors directly and work out a deal that makes sense for everybody, then we can have a product that we know works. We can have the support of the person who created it, and we can have their expertise, you know, drive the success of our product.
Right.
If they learned that lesson and they can implement those steps, this thing could be really cool. It just seems, though, that after years and years of feedback, the odds of that are slim. I mean, maybe just the fact that this stuff has more awareness now from a mainstream audience, and thus a better chance at like making them a lot of money, that they're going to listen. Time will tell. I mean, I'm certainly not going to give them benefit of the doubt.
I mean, just how many times can we be burned on this stuff before people just say, I'm not even going to give you a chance, because, and it's obviously not super hard to do this stuff. Nintendo has been able to figure this out for the SNES and NES about putting together packages that are $60 and $80 that are very, very well priced, high quality. The emulation, it's good enough. But when you have stuff like what you had with their previous At Games release for the Genesis, listen to even simple games that don't have like really complex soundtracks. I guess it's somewhat complex, but listen to Sonic 2 on one of those consoles. It sounds like absolute garbage. These are your games. These are your franchises, Sega. You should be protecting these things. Like,
yeah, I'm just surprised they wanted to work with At Games again to give them another shot. Like, oh, I mean, that was their chance last year to do something cool. Like, they screwed it up.
Can't you call Nintendo bad and say like, "Yo, Nintendo, like,
what it's if me, Sega?
It's Mr. Sega. Like, we love what you're doing. We love this Super NES or Super Nintendo Classic Edition that you put out. Got one in under my TV right now. Couldn't believe it. You guys actually had pretty good games on that thing. But what I would love to do is put together something similar for the Mega Drive and the Sega Genesis. Could you, you know, give us a referral to whoever is putting those together for you? Or like, even better, God, like, what if I saw someone mention this, like, what if Sega just said, "Hey, Nintendo, what if you wanted to put out a Sega Genesis Classic? Like, we'll just give you all the games and we just work out like a revenue share for it." Because obviously you guys figured out how to do it right. And, you know, these guys at Games haven't so far. So,
yeah, this might be the last chance for a while to get something like this from Sega. So
on the heels,
fingers crossed for the best, you know?
Yeah, and it's on the heels of another, I forget what they're calling it, another Sega Genesis Classic Collection that they're putting out on the PlayStation 4 and on the Xbox One, on the heels of things like Sonic's Ultimate Genesis Collection, which have been, again, not perfect, but pretty good. And also really celebrated those games, like put in awesome, like the stuff that they did with Sonic's Ultimate Genesis Collection were like, had so much love in them that I wish they would just continue to show that kind of passion and effort into a project like this too.
Hopefully they get it. I mean, certainly the other announcements do indicate that Sega is listening to fans, I think.
Well, let's talk about some good emulation. Hey, you know, Sega Ages and companies like M2 that do unbelievable jobs putting these games back out and re-releasing them, they're going to do it on the Switch. Isn't that awesome? Ooh,
that is awesome.
Sega does what Nintendo. They're bringing their old games to the Nintendo Switch. So,
what's been announced so far?
So they announced it. There's going to be 12 games, but it looks like, and they don't have the exact release dates on these just yet, but the games that they showed from the start were Sonic the Hedgehog, Phantasy Star, and I believe it was Shinobi. Here we go. Got it right here. Boom. So this is the list that they have right now. Excuse me. No, Sonic the Hedgehog. This is really weird. Sonic the Hedgehog 1, Phantasy Star, and a badass game, awesome soundtrack, Thunder Force 4.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Okay. Which is Lightning Force.
Yes.
I don't know why I guess, was it Thunder Force 4 or Lightning Force? I thought it was just Lightning Force.
I think it's just Lightning Force in the US.
Whatever. They called it that. Maybe it's Thunder Force 4 in Japan. But that's all they're doing. They said they're going to have more than 15 classic Sega titles all developed by M2, and they're going to be on the eShop starting this summer. So again, like that's kind of what you want. They did incredible work on the 3DS. Like those 3D classics that they put out were just, again, like love letters. Like they had awesome options and dip switches for arcade games that you could modify in all those versions. It was exactly what made those games on the Sega Saturn when they re-released them, Sega Ages, just so spectacular and, you know, coveted and to this day.
Yeah, M2 knows what it's doing for sure. Those games are in no better hands.
What do you think? Do you think Nintendo is going to ever release their back catalog on the Nintendo Switch aside from just, well, if whenever they do their internet service or whatever, they'll give us Super Mario Bros. 3 again?
I don't suspect they will. Honestly, I feel like with the release of the classic systems, they're trying to distance themselves from managing that kind of product and that sort of market. I imagine it's probably more complicated than we assume it is to, you know, secure licenses and to figure out what games to release for that thing. I mean, certainly putting out the classic systems, which have great appeal and probably sell better given the hype
for sure
than individual virtual console like releases. I almost suspect that they are going to not lean into 8 and 16-bit stuff on Switch. Even probably not Nintendo 64 either. I just don't see it happening.
Yeah.
And, I mean, obviously there is the subscription stuff, you know, which will be adding things like multiplayer to online multiplayer to two-player games. So that sounds cool. Like, I can see that being added value. But if Nintendo can't find a way to actually instill added value in old games, I feel like it would just be treading water. And I feel like that's not what they're interested in right now.
I'll believe it when I see it. I still, again, come on, Peter, we're like, what, 13 months into the Switch's life, there's still no online service?
Yeah.
Like, do you even think that will come this year?
I mean, I do. I do in so much as I don't really understand what is so complicated about it for them. I'm not even sure what benefit it's going to be at this point. Because I use my Switch a lot. There are some games that I can play online with other folks. I suppose once the service goes live, I won't be able to play online without the subscription, but
yeah,
I don't know if that's it. Like, I don't know what's taking them so long. They're leaving money on the table for one. And it's not really a good look to say this basic thing, well, we don't have it ready a year after launch.
Yeah. Unfortunate. Well, you know what, Nintendo, just focus on your strengths. You have a pretty good system right there and some very good games on it. Up until this point. So aside from that, the final piece that I wanted to talk about, we'll probably have one more piece of news after that, but the last piece from this Sega event was the confirmed Larrabee Lock. Mentioned it over a year ago, heard some rumblings about this from my sources, and it's finally announced the Shenmue 1 and 2 HD collection for, in Japan, the PlayStation 4, but worldwide it will also be available on the Xbox One and the PC. They're re-releasing these games with multiple languages, so you can play in English or in Japanese, which you might want to play in Japanese for obvious reasons if you've played the Shenmue games again.
Hello, Ryo.
Hey, man. Yeah. I would love to hear it's Bob, right? Who's the guy, the Jamaican guy?
Yeah, yeah.
I can't wait to hear what he sounds like in Japanese. Voice actor.
I am very stoked for this collection, especially after watching the DF Retro stuff on Shenmue recently.
Yeah.
Because there's really no great version. Like, there's no version that you look at or that you know with certainty is the best one, right? There's something wonky about all of them. And this will just sort of unify everything and, you know, eliminate a lot of the pop-in and stuff that, you know, hampered some of the Dreamcast release.
Or the Star Fox-like frame rate in Shenmue 2, specifically, yes, like in the open areas of Hong Kong.
Right. So this is great. I mean, the original, at least, doesn't hold up terribly well. It's a slow, arduous game. But, at least from a historical perspective, to have it in its best possible shape is awesome. Because I'd much rather revisit it like this, presumably, than, you know, its original form.
So it's going to be $29.99, which is the right price for the collection, both physical and digital. So they're pretty much, again, like I think when the Sega has gotten some pushback from the fans, it's when they've been doing like digital only releases where they'd be releasing things like physically in Japan. Like again, I think Peter and I are both, and mostly I bet most of the listeners that are tuning in today like to have a physical release. They want to have this as part of their collection and not something that, you know, we need to worry about, you know, being able to download a long time from now. But what they're doing is, again, they're going to have English and Japanese voice tracks. They're going to update the controls and also include the classic controls. But you remember Dreamcast had one stick. So to have just, oh God, the majesty of dual joystick support for that camera will be gigantic if they don't, you know, have a terrible, you know, control scheme for it. And they're not doing anything crazy. It looks like they're just, you know, gently upscaling the visuals, which they say higher resolutions, improved textures, and they'll also have graphical options on PC, the updated user interface that I talked about before, and players will be able to choose between modern and classic control settings. And again, you know, $30 coming this year, 2018 worldwide, is pretty spectacular.
Yeah. Last night was a great night for Sega News. I was very happy.
Do you think, I'll be curious to see how people pick these games up in a world of Yakuza, where Yakuza is obviously the kind of sort of spiritual successor to what Shenmue did in terms of its level of detail and like rebuilding a complete city for you to walk around in. And I think like you and I even talked to, I can't remember who I talked to about this, but Shenmue is a very big reason of why I was so obsessed about traveling to Japan, you know, because that was very much like my first trip to Japan was in 2000 on my Dreamcast. Like I was just so fascinated by everything that made that, that town in Shenmue, Dawita or whatever it was. And like, it was just so rad, like those vending machines and stuff like that. And just like hanging out in the convenience store and going to the arcade and, you know, finding out that about the three blades of, you know, the folks from China that emigrated to Japan. Like that was, learned a lot about Japan through Shenmue 1. And then like, I bet a lot of people miss Shenmue 2. Like how many folks imported the PAL version to play on a Dreamcast or picked it up on the original Xbox, because, you know, hats off to them for at least doing it, for bringing that game over with all those awesome Sega partnerships that they did to launch the original Xbox. But, you know, at that point, you could be playing so many other games on that hardware instead of Shenmue 2, which was still pretty clunky.
Yeah, it was a series ahead of its time for sure. And I think a lot of people are excited about 3, maybe who have never even played the first two. You talk about, you know, the achievements of the Yakuza series and obviously like some of the parallels there. It's going to be super, like, I feel like if anything, Shenmue 3 has to live up to Yakuza more than Shenmue 1 or 2.
No way.
Because those first two are not what I would consider amazing games, right? Where like a lot of Yakuza has become that. So can Shenmue 3 stand up to a series that it inspired? Dun,
dun, dun. I don't, God bless them. I funded the game. I think I funded it for like $100 or something like that.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I've been getting those updates every couple of weeks in my email.
Yeah.
And I'm not seeing it just yet. Maybe I'll be more hyped once I play through Shenmue 2. And then I understand that I need to see the continuation or somewhat conclusion of this story, but you know, GameSpot gave Shenmue 2 an 87. So
there you go.
There you go. It's got to be good. 404 not found. Oh crap. Jeez. I don't know if that's Metacritic or GameSpot, but we'll have the opportunity to go back and revisit this game and decide for ourselves sometime this year. And then the last piece of news I just want to hit on real quick before we left. Let me see if I can go back to this tab. Was that Xbox One added 19 new original Xbox backwards compatible games this month. And this list kicks ass. All right. So coming up, depending on when you listen to this, it's probably going to be tomorrow. But on April 17th, we're going to get Blinks the Time Sweeper, Okay, that's cool. Got to have it. Breakdown, which was a rad kick-ass game from Namco, which I can't wait to play that again and probably be disappointed that it doesn't hold up. I remember that game was so cool. And the box art with like the glowing arm and fist was so badass. I really liked that game. I totally got sold on it from the official Xbox magazine too. There was a demo on their demo disc. That's how I got it. Conker's Live and Reloaded, their remake from the N64 game, which you can also play on the Rare Collection for the Xbox One, but you'll now be able to play your original Xbox disc. This is a big one. Elder Scrolls 3 Morrowind. Again, not only backwards compatible, but some of these will have Xbox One enhancements as well. Hunter the Reckoning. Do you remember playing this game? Also an Xbox magazine demo disc game that I ended up really liking.
No, actually. It's totally unfamiliar to me.
So it's, I don't know if you would kind of compare it to, like, I guess maybe Diablo a little bit, but it was like a three-fourths perspective game where you had all these different characters, like this one guy with a shotgun, and you just have these waves of enemies that would come after you, and you'd be like in a subway station. There was a sequel as well. It was pretty good. It was like a really fun multiplayer game. Like if you get three other people with you, really fun four-player action game, which along with all this stuff, I should mention that these games will be available for purchase too. Usually the original Xbox games are $9.99, so $10, which is a very fair price. And you also get to play games like Jade Empire, a game that also was really well reviewed back then, which I never played.
Yeah, an old BioWare title. Some people have told me, because I haven't really messed around with the Xbox One backwards compatibility too much yet, but they were saying that if you put in the game disc, that it'll automatically give you the digital copy of that game as well.
Yeah, so that's how it handles it. Like, I've been doing that with the current stuff that they have out there. But what it does is once you put in the disc, it basically says, we need to download an update. So it downloads the digital version. So it doesn't read off the disc when it plays it. It's just doing like a disc check to make sure that you have the game, that you own the game, but you can't borrow your buddy's copy of, you know, Mercenaries, put it in, download it, then give it back. You have to always have that disc to launch it up. Like same thing with the 360 stuff, like with Crackdown, you need to have the disc in there to boot up the game. Otherwise it will say, you don't own this game. We'll send you to the page on the store and then you can go buy it. Even though you already have it installed, you have to buy like a license to play it. Otherwise that disc is your license.
I might almost just buy the digital copy then at that point.
Well, totally, because it's not, no matter what, you're going to need access to those servers to play it. So you're going to have to.
Yeah.
But again, I think that's really good because some of these games that we're going to talk about, you know, are way more than $10 now to get that disc copy. So if you can get a digital version, like of games like Panzer Dragoon Orta, huge. That for $10 is going to be awesome. I cannot wait to play through that game.
Yeah, I'm super stoked by what Microsoft is doing here. And Orta is like one of those games where it was like, once they started dipping into the well of like the Japanese hits, Then I would start paying attention. So now they've got my attention and I'm waiting for things like Otogi 1 and 2.
Right.
The original, you know, Genma Onimusha, which I don't even know, because that game has the face of a movie star literally plastered on the main character. Is his likeness licensed? I don't know, but I really hope that games like that end up becoming available.
Always, if you sign a license, folks, and you want to or you want to license something for yourself, make sure it's always in perpetuity so we don't have to delist stuff.
Yeah, come on.
Grand Theft Auto 4 is like having to send out an update next week and remove a ton of songs from the game because I no longer have the license for them. Also SSX 3, again, good snowboarding game. That'll be good to have. And also Panzer Dragoon Orta, I feel like absolute garbage because I, again, thankfully I already own a copy of this game, so I'm just going to pop in the disc and it'll download that. But again, one of my favorite episodes was from that Summer of Xbox stuff where Ryan Payton went out and actually interviewed the director of Panzer Dragoon Orta. So now I can finally play through that game and then talk about it. So I'll feel less of a piece of garbage to talk about that now.
It's gone up in price, hasn't it?
that's what happens is as soon as these things get announced, like copies of Crackdown were going for $3.99 at GameSpot. And you know, sorry, GameStop, my fault.
How dare you?
I know like that doesn't happen eight times a day for you. But what happens is though they automatically jack up the price, like copies of Crackdown on at GameStop right now are probably way more expensive. Like they were in the bargain bin. They had these huge like stacks of discs just in sleeves, and now they are way more expensive. Like right now, Crackdown's $20. It was $3 like a couple weeks before, or like obviously the day before they announced it was on backwards compatibility.
I'm seeing copies of Orta selling, having sold for $70+.
I know. And it was
and
go back and like, if you kept scrolling on eBay, you'd go back like a couple weeks ago.
Sure.
And there were like $20.
Man. Yeah. The same thing happened with Phantom Dust. Yeah. It was like $30. Yep. Wow. Yeah. When Phantom Dust was talked about at E3 all those years ago, I remember.
You just get excited, man. You're like, oh man, they're coming back. So I want to have the whole collection, or I want to replay this again before it comes out.
Yeah. Gosh. Well,
when Major Nelson lets you know,
now.
Yeah, as soon as Major Nelson starts talking, you got to get to GameStop as soon as humanly possible. So those are all coming up April 17th. And then on April 26th, again, some pretty good games in here. We got Destroy All Humans, Full Spectrum Warrior, Mercenaries Playground of Destruction. That's the big one. I cannot wait to see how that looks with the Xbox One X enhancements, if that is going to be one of those Xbox One X enhanced games. MX Unleashed, because I guess why not? Panzer Elite Action Fields of Glory, that's in Europe only. Then we have, what is this, six Star Wars games. Battlefront, Battlefront 2, Jedi Knight, Jedi Academy, which is one game. Jedi Starfighter, Knights of the Old Republic 2, the Sith Lords, that's coming off of KOTOR 1 already being available. And this is the big one. This is what actually, as soon as this news came out, I ordered a copy of this from GameStop, Star Wars Republic Commando.
Oh, really? It's a good one?
Yeah, and it's an awesome first-person shooter in the Star Wars universe. But the problem is, on the PC, it runs like garbage because it does not scale up well to better hardware. Like the resolution and the text gets all messed up. It runs at like really wonky speeds, so it doesn't run right. And so that's why I like, and again, I'm, you know, all the power to you for folks that want to build PCs with, you know, three 1080 Ti's in it. But I love what Microsoft is doing with the Xbox One, turning it basically into a PC that is much more user-friendly is probably the best way to put it, where all you do is you download an update. Like Microsoft's doing all the work to make sure everything runs great on it, and you're getting to like continue to play the games that you bought years and years ago, but at better frame rates, better resolutions. You look at what they're doing with Red Dead Redemption, basically giving people that high-res PC version that they wanted for the last like decade. They're giving it to you now, but for free.
Yeah, that was my exact thought when they announced that. It's like, this is what everyone's been waiting for, or, you know, had waited for and then wrote off as never going to happen.
Yeah, yeah. And then, again, I still love my PlayStation 4. It will be used for, what, like, Peter, 30, 40 hours for God of War next week?
I mean, just for the story alone.
that's insane. I
get
that
game having only finished 40% of the open world stuff, and that was... There's no in-game clock, but I you know, guesstimated it around 30 hours. That game is huge.
Yeah, we talked about it earlier this week, but I was very lukewarm. I know a lot of people love like the trailers from E3 and the demos that they gave, but I was like, I don't know, man, like another God of War, but yeah, that's why I loved your review.
I had no hype going in. It was the exact same situation as Horizon Zero Dawn for me.
Yeah.
Just started playing and it was like, oh,
so
I do need a game like this. This is amazing.
So I can't, like, honestly, next weekend I have, and it's kind of a bummer. I got to go to a speed seminar in my world of fitness, like a seminar on speed training and stuff. But like my nights, I'm not going out. I'm staying in. I'm playing. I'm anti-social Kevin next weekend, and I'm staying in and playing God of War. You will see me on PlayStation 4 Pro on my brand new 65-inch OLED, just having my eyes bleed from not blinking playing that game. I cannot wait to be in such a terrible shape next week after that.
It's so good. It's so good in HDR and 4K. Yeah. Just
That's I mean it was like that, and getting the Xbox One X that made me think, you know what? I can totally pay off an OLED over the course of the next 24 months on my Best Buy card. No problem. So yeah, we can all do that. That's why it's great to have zero interest on your Best Buy card. Don't do that. Don't buy stuff you can't afford. I take that back. I can somewhat afford it, I guess. At least I can talk myself into it. But I want to wrap up with this. First off, folks, thank you so much for tuning in, for your patience while we've been gone for a little bit. But as I alluded to, I run a gym now, so my life has been super busy. The gym has been doing really well lately. So that's a good and bad thing, where I have less time to do stuff I love, like back in my play, but it means like I can actually have a roof over my head, which is also equally important and part of the reason why I'm able to play video games from time to time. But Peter, aside from the God of War review, which everyone should go to GameSpot.com and go read if they're skeptical whatsoever on picking up God of War next week. Aside from that, what do you got coming up? What's on the schedule for you over there?
Donkey Kong Tropical Freeze is probably the next game I'll be tackling.
Oh, is that, when's that? Is that next? That's May, right?
May 4th.
Okay.
Yeah. And man, apart from that, we're in a bit of a lull right now. Next Friday when God of War comes out, we will also be seeing Labo. But I think only a few outlets are going to be getting that early. So we'll be discovering it, you know, in its entirety, over at GameSpot the same way everyone else will in the real world. So that's pretty much about it. You know, like E3 is not too far away. We've got a monitor in the office that sort of hangs over all of our desks with a countdown timer, that like every 10 minutes, Reggie's face materializes and then fades away back into the clock. It is an ominous sign that reminds me that, yes, one of the most exciting and most arduous moments of the year is coming soon. So, you know, we're just kind of getting ready for that and taking care of the few games that are coming out between now and then.
That's right. Oh, my God. E3 is 2 months away.
54 days, I think.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. It's going to be here before we know it.
I think this is going to be an awesome E3. Like, these things are super mature. We have the chance to get some very exciting announcements. It's like, man, it's about time we had a new Halo. Like, I would like to play some more Halo. Like, it's been 3 years, folks. Come on. Give me some more Master Chief. I got to finish another fight.
I'm like the last person to talk to about Halo.
No, that's okay. It's one of those weird things where I still love the Master Chief. I will still suit up and figure out why the hell Cortana wants to kill everyone.
Sure.
Because that's where we're at.
I just want Metroid Prime 4 anything.
Think that will be there?
I think we'll see a teaser, honestly. Yeah. I think Nintendo would be remiss to be totally quiet. I also am curious, like, if that's the only Metroid thing in the works at the moment, because the last Samus Returns did very well from a critical and financial standpoint. I don't know. I would like to think that maybe that game could be coming to Switch, or maybe Nintendo's got something to, you know, because Metroid Prime 4 is not going to come out anytime soon, I don't think.
Right.
So I'd like to think they have something else in the interim to keep us happy, but I don't know. We'll see.
It reminded me to look at Next Level Games, their website, because they announced Nintendo's doing some weird stuff. They're still supporting, and again, really good if you love your 3DS. They're supporting the hell out of it. They're putting out a bunch of games for it this year and next year. But Next Level Games obviously did Luigi's Mansion Dark Moon, but it doesn't seem like they are making the remake of Luigi's Mansion on the 3DS. So it's been a long time, and I believe they also worked on, or maybe it's just their website is not up to date, because they worked on Metroid, that Metroid 3DS game that everyone was kind of a little bit lukewarm on. But love to see what they could do on Nintendo Switch too.
Oh, the Federation Force game?
Yeah, maybe a new Punch-Out.
I would love a new Punch-Out. I was showing my friends the other day, and we're definitely on a tangent here, but the Treasure-developed Ashita no Joe boxing game on Game Boy Advance, that game is really good, and there's a new Ashita no Joe anime out that is also really good, so I've kind of given it to myself to play that Game Boy Advance game, because I do love Punch-Out. And Nintendo, they put out that Arcade Archives release with Hamster not too long ago of
just last week.
Punch Out. Yeah. So, hey, you never know, man. Maybe if we think about Punch Out hard enough, a new one will materialize.
Just think really hard about Glass Joe. And,
I always do.
just think about King Hippo before you go to sleep. It is his trunks that are falling down in front of you. That's a great thing to think about going forward. But we should wrap up, or we'll just, you know, hang out and talk about old games forever, which isn't a bad thing. But I actually have to go to a lunch. So, Peter, thank you so much for hanging out. People can follow you at PC Brown on Twitter. And of course, you're always doing awesome stuff over at GameSpot.com, right?
Yeah, I am indeed. And thank you for having me. It's been a lot of fun.
And we'll make sure we get some emails out to @games to see if we can get some units to make sure we can have good Sega Genesis minis, whatever we're going to call it.
You said it.
I did. I tried. Well, that's going to do it for this episode. Thank you so much for tuning in, folks. Thank you to the patrons. They have an awesome time over at our Discord channel. Lots of great discussion going on in there. Seeing right now, Phil Summers, who also, oh, you know what? I want to do this real quick. Before we go, Philip Summers, we need to mention him because he actually helped me with some of my gym logo stuff, but at @SHAMOOZAL. Go to his Twitter account because he has this insane hand-drawn Contra like manual that he put together that is so friggin' cool, and it is completely free to download. You need to make sure that you go and check this out, and I will do my best to remember to link to this in the show notes, but he just did an incredible job putting this together, and I just can't wait to see what else he does. It's an illustrated Contra guide. Man, the guy's super talented, and it's just so rad that he also listens to the show. So shout out to you, Philip Summers. Go check out that cool Contra guide and art book. Man, it's just free. Just go download. It's great. All right, well, thanks again, everyone. We will see you next time. Here's some more music from 3D.Game Heroes. Why not?